My guest today, he's negotiated over $2 billion in sports and entertainment contracts at the agency that's inspired Jerry Maguire. Like you said, one of my favorite movies. Then you lost $100 million and went bankrupt, which is amazing. Today, you run multiple businesses. You coach sales teams privately. You chair Napoleon Hill Institute, and you produced over 2,000 podcast episodes. So you don't just talk about deals. You've been inside more of them at a higher stake than almost anybody on this show. So you closed the $900 million deal in your first week at Lee Steinberg's agency. Walk me through what that week actually looked like and what you had to figure out in real time to get that done.
Well, it's so interesting because Lee has publicly exposed himself as being an alcoholic. At the time, it was completely private. So Lee, in my very first week as CEO, got arrested for public drunkenness and was thrown into a detox center, moving into a rehab center for multiple occasions. And this had been going on for years. Mm-hmm. I was thrusted into a $900 million purchase of a professional football team. And luckily, I had taken a gentleman's job. His name was Jeff Morad. Jeff Morad had taken the $45 million that he made with Lee, bought into the Phoenix baseball team, the Arizona Diamondbacks, recently sold out of that as president of the Diamondbacks, and was buying the San Diego Padres for $245 million, which he later sold for almost $700 million, which now is selling for $4 billion. And I asked Jeff for advice, and he said, look, you can still talk to Lee. And basically, Lee told me these three things that helped me through the deal. One, always be fair. Now, I had my own philosophy of fairness. Fairness to me is understanding what you like, what you don't like, what you know and what you don't know, what works for you and what doesn't work for you. So I can give you more of what you like, take away what you don't like, give you more of what you know, take away what you don't know, give you more of what's working, take away what's not working, because that's where value lies. So when he said, don't negotiate to the last penny, always be fair, I was aligned with the abundant attitude. And then ironically, your first question leads me back to this title of my book, because Lee told me, always be fair, don't negotiate to the last penny, but don't do business with dicks. And so one of the things that Lee always did was require people in every transaction, all of his athletes, celebrities, entertainers, to give back to a charitable purpose or cause that was aligned with their beliefs. So whether it was Ralph Bernerska for critters, or whether it was work done for single moms to give down payments for homes, or whether it was Chris Areola, who couldn't afford shoes and had to put cardboard in shoes because he couldn't afford a new pair. He gave, you know, thousands of pairs of shoes to kids. We changed from the ground up by using what I call bug lights. You know, when Evander Holyfield, who we represented, when Evander Holyfield gets on a commercial, a public service announcement, and he says, real men don't hit women, it means so much more when it's Evander Holyfield than you.
Yeah.
So we had an incredible opportunity to change the world by using the biggest names in the world to impact social change, to impact charity, to impact causes. And that's what that initial business deal revealed to me, that it's not that difficult. It's just a more zeros on the deal, but it's always be fair, don't negotiate to the last penny, and don't do business with dicks.
So one thing that caught my eye, you said you've lost over $100 million, partly because you surrounded yourself with the wrong people. I've done that too many times in my life. You were running a company that represented the biggest names in sports. How did someone who reads people for a living get the people around you so wrong?
I think my biggest problem was that I didn't know how to say no. So there's two problems. I think everybody surrounds themselves with the wrong people because we're born into a family, and a lot of families. You know why your family can press your buttons? Because they installed them. Right. And there's dysfunction in every relationship. So one of my bigger problems is, one, I exposed myself to a lot of of the wrong things, drugs, alcohol, strip clubs, mm-hmm. all of these. But that's all around sports and entertainment anyway. So it's very difficult to avoid. But mm-hmm. later on, as I've studied this stuff, my biggest problem is my relationship with no, right? I had FOMO and FOPO, a fear of missing out and a fear of other people's opinion. And I, through the years now, have been able to transform that into JOMO and JOPO, the joy of missing out and the joy of other people's opinion. I tell people all the time when they give me their opinion, I'm like, thank you so much. Even when they're hating on me, I'm like, thank you. You must really care about me. I must be making a great impact if you're taking the time to email me, fuck off. You know, that, like, honestly, I must be a pretty important dude. If I'm worth your time, that you feel it's necessary to DM me or email me or call me or text me. Most people won't call because they're a bunch of wimps. I wish somebody someday would call me and tell me, hey, stop annoying me, fuck off, so I could talk to them. But so far, there's a lot of bravery in DM and email. A lot of courageous people.
Heckle keyboard warriors.
Yes.
It's so amazing. I'm going to tell you, I'm actually going through my own little phase right now. I'm going through a coaching program where I'm uncovering the judgments that have been installed in me, the cultural kind of implantations that have been installed over me for generations, right? It's come generation to generation. And to your point on the no thing or the opinions, I'm actually struggling with this right now. Maybe others who are listening will feel this too. I've come from a world of having to be very defensive about everything that I do. So whenever somebody would give me positive criticism, positive feedback, naturally, before listening to what they said, the story I'm telling myself is they're threatening me, they're giving me something, and I get very defensive, and it's like a flaw. So how would you say, Shane, take a step back, and when you are getting those, before that kind of spark goes and your emotions drive the kind of how you behave, how would you stop that or advise me to recommend I stop that or catch myself before that it erupts?
You know, I'm blessed to coach millions of people in this, and I love this question because it, something that everyone is challenged with. First, it's understanding our human nature. So here's how human nature works. We are afraid of uncertainty.
Massive.
So uncertainty always exists. And so we have a human nature reaction to uncertainty. And it's predicated upon protecting three things. Initially, the body. So we are going to respond when the body is in danger. And this is from the beginning of time.
Okay. Right?
A saber tiger is walking by the cave. We're going to respond with a natural reaction, emotional reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
It moved to our thoughts as we evolved. So now we were actually, when we think things, we respond. Right? Mm-hmm. We think that this is going to happen. We're worried. We're resentful. We're guilty. We're upset. Okay. Now it's really difficult because we respond to this perception of identity. It doesn't exist because of social media. So what we're built to do when we respond is to do three things. Defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So in all three cases, in person, on thoughts, and perceived identity, we try to defend ourselves, or we try to control the situation, or we try to prove ourselves. And so when we look at, am I trying to defend, control, or prove, knowing, by the way, Shane, nobody, including me, nobody likes feedback in the present. So we have to stay present when we get feedback because we don't like it.
Yes,
and when we don't like something, we defend, control, or prove. So here's how I teach people to resolve the biggest challenge of reconciliation between the human experience and the infinite power that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of evoking a need to be right, a need to be offended, a need to be separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, or worried, which are all duplicative negatives. They not only interfere with our higher selves, but it's wishing for what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
God gave us a free will. in the aspect of defend, control, and prove, God gave us the ability to stop. God gave us the ability to stop and breathe, to drop, to ease, to drop, to recollect, remind, and remember God. Mm-hmm. And then he gave us the power not only to stop and drop, but to roll in our divine direction, aligning the meaning of that offense to where you want to be, not where you don't want to be. So instead of resisting it, going over and under it, through it, around it, looking to it, cheating it, denying it, supply it by stopping, dropping, and rolling. In other words, simply put, by my mom when I was a little boy, when your mind, body, and soul are on fire, because my mom told me when you're on fire, you got to stop, you got to drop, and you roll.
Before the sports world, you were CEO of Samsung's first smartphone division at 29 years old. So you went from launching hardware in Silicon Valley to managing athlete contracts. What did building a product at Samsung teach you about selling that nothing in sports could?
Oh, time. You know, when you're dealing with a product, time is so important compared to presentation. Time is controlled in the world of sports, right? You have a year contract, a 3-year contract. You have a player that has skills, knowledge, and desire that you can easily align with what's doing well, what's stable, and you think is doing well for the team, league, or organization. It's easy to quantitate a value, and you know the competition. There's 32 teams in the NFL, or there's Mike Tyson against Evander Holyfield. It wasn't challenging, but even more today than it was in 1999, you can't imagine. You have no idea when you have a product what's going to happen tomorrow. Time and motion and value changes much faster in products than it does in the sports agency world. So when I had the world's first smartphone that they didn't even call a smartphone, they called it a convergence device, merging a phone with a computer. It was a Windows device. It was a Windows CE device. So I was working with the biggest company in the world, Microsoft. You would think that I was the leading technology, but nonetheless, it wasn't the smartphone that made it for Samsung. It was the flip phone that Motorola, right,
took I remember.
With their Razor. We passed up on that. There's so many variables, and you don't even know what competition exists. So I'd say time and competition are the two biggest differences. You know your time frame in sports, and you know the competition. You don't know the time frame in sports. In fact, I always said, working for Microsoft and Samsung, the longer we go, the less we know. So I love the realm of sports that controlled time frames and competition, where technology, especially products, you can't control time frames or competition. No, today you have no. I get pitched so many AI types of things, and they think they're the only one. And I'm telling you, Shane, sometimes I've heard the same pitch in the same day, and they're telling me we're the only ones that do that. And I'm like, that's funny.
It's amusing, right? It's very amusing. So I don't know how you deal with it, but you require one thing that I caught earlier on the charitable side, and I think that's quite interesting. I've never heard it before, but you require every project at Sports One to have a charitable component, and you claim it accelerates revenue. Most operators, I deal with them all the time. I've owned an agency. Now I'm trying to help agencies. But most operators see philanthropy, for example, as a favorite word, a cost center. What's the mechanism that makes it a growth engine?
It's truly that which empowers and inspires a business. You see, remember my motto. It's make a lot of money for the sake of helping others. Not I'll be happy when I make a lot of money so I can help others. So I'm making money, and we have to have the inspiration to apply our why so that everyone knows when they go to close a deal, it's for the sake of helping others. It's not rhetoric. It's for the sake of, we're giving meaning to our past. And I learned this from Lee Steinberg with our athletes. that they were inspired to continue their careers, to give back to their community, and really help a few things business-wise. It qualifies the customers, vendors, partners, and associates that you have, just like it qualified our clients when we were in a sports agency, that a guy like Plexico Burris, who shot himself in the leg, who resisted giving back to others, if he said, hey, man, I'm not going to sign with you guys because I don't want to give back to my community, thank you so much, because you just did a great thing for us. You know what you did? You won. You got a loss for us, because 80% of people's clients are either breaking even or losing money. And if somebody does not want to give back, we're going to lose money on them. And two, we just screwed our competitor because now we handed off lost, which is exactly what occurred. And so you get a duplicative positive when you qualify people by the fact that they want to work with a company that makes a lot of money for the sake of helping others, instead of a company that's going to be happy when they make a lot of money and claim that they're going to help others.
That makes a lot of sense. So I want to touch on one thing that was really, really, really eye-catching. You teach something called the stage theory, where the focus is on capturing opportunity rather than creating it. So for a sales leader listening, and you guys out there right now who's pushing their team to create more pipeline, what would you tell them they're getting wrong?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I want to give this to everyone in your community. If you email me, which is right below, David, which means beloved, at D is my first initial, Meltzer, which means servant. So let me be your beloved servant, especially in this case. David at dmeltzer.com. I will send you my book. I will sign it. I will pay for shipping and the book. For everyone in your community that emails me, David at dmeltzer.com. I'll tell you what's missing in sales is the common sense of articulating value to exceed what we're asking for. Most people that sell don't and aren't comfortable in articulating a value to exceed what they're asking for because they don't know where values derive. They're usually dumping features and benefits on people. They're making assumptions that aren't true. You see, the value that you want to articulate is quite simple because it can only be derived from six different things. You either derive value by giving people more of what they like or taking away what they don't like. You derive value by giving people more of what's working or take away what's not working. You derive value by giving people more of what they know or taking away what they don't know. And if you can have a conversation about a topic, subject, or an expertise, a product, service, or solution that you're selling, and you can find out, hey, what do you like about this product? What don't you like? What's working with this service? What's not working? What do you know about this solution? What don't you know? I can ask two really guided questions that provide exponentiality in sales. Would it help you if? Would it help you if I did this for you? Or do you know anyone that can help me? A question that most people don't ask, which builds a community of people that are buying from you and selling for you for life, which is the secret sauce of any successful business. And then the second tip that I have beyond the six things that we want to derive to get to a question of would it help you if, or do you know one that could help me, is getting people to get back to us. It's a new art that's the most important thing. So if I can get people to call me back, email me back, DM me back, message me back, if I can get twice as many people to get back to me, my sales will go up twice as much immediately. And I'll get better at selling. I'll get better at selling because I'll have more practice articulating the values that I just described. So not only it's more than twice as much sales, by just learning how to get people to get back to you. Because today, it's harder than ever to get people to get back to you because it's so accessible. But I teach people two things. In my coaching, we have a Monday virtual group. I have a wait list for one-on-one. I do business advisory and investment. So if anybody's interested in that, email me. But I teach two things that change your business. One, your relationship with no. I have so many different no rules. And then two, how to get people to get back to you. And then three, how to articulate value to exceed what you're asking for. If you want to learn those things, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I'll sign, send my book to you, pay for shipping in the book, and just appreciate the opportunity to share with your community. Shane, we'll have you on more of my shows. Come back on your shows. Where are you located?
I'm in London.
Oh, I'll be there for a mastermind with Brian Rose, Kishore Lula, Sanjay Anduja. So we'll be there in July 27th. Okay. Come and join me. My team will reach out. Maybe you can speak at my mastermind.
I would love to do that. That's a very welcome offer. I would love to do that.
It'll be at the private members club, and we'll invite your community to attend the mastermind. Here you speak. It's at the private member club in July in London. We'll look forward to it. Email me, david@dmeltzer.com.
Wow. Last question of the episode, because I know you have a tight schedule. You've watched hundreds of entrepreneurs pitch on 2-Minute Drill and Elevator Pitch. In the first 30 seconds of a pitch, what tells you this person has a real business versus someone who just has an idea they're excited about?
I'm really only concerned about their credibility. So if somebody is being honest, they're not overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, or cheating. If they show transparency and vulnerability in the first 30 seconds and can attach me emotionally, I don't care if the product exists or doesn't exist. I know I have the right entrepreneur that can make that business happen. There may be a problem in valuation if the product doesn't exist yet, but I got the right entrepreneur. I know I got a good person to invest in, which is the key to whether it's 2-Minute Drill, Elevator Pitch, or now my new show, Go Fund Yourself, the number one cheddar, where we have crowdfunding, Reg CF and Reg A funding for a show called Go Fund Yourself. So we, like you said, thousands of pitches a year, hundreds of pitches a week. I look for credibility, emotional attachment, and someone that's capable of articulating value to exceed what they're asking for.
Amazing. David, I know you have a tight schedule, so I'll let you go. Thank you so much for your time. Anybody who's listening, where would you tell them to go to find more about you and everything you've said? Where's like a portfolio of kind of events, everything that they can find out about David?
Two places. One, just email me directly, David, beloved, at D, first initial, Meltzer servant, david@dmeltzer.com, or just Google me or AI me, whatever chat you have. You will find me. I am very accessible and gracious with my time. I guarantee 5 minutes for anyone that needs it. So please reach out to me, Google me, search me, or david@dmeltzer.com, email me.
David, it's been an absolute pleasure. Have an amazing day and an amazing weekend. That's it, guys. That's the pod for today. Thanks, David.